it brings Charlie Kirk not just as a political operative coming them to tell about politics, but he becomes a theological teacher.
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Matthew Bodie. He's a professor of rhetoric and composition at the University of North Georgia. He's the author of a number of books and articles, but we're going to be primarily talking about his work about Turning Point USA and its founder, Charlie Kirk. After being targeted by the organization, Matthew began looking back at the rhetoric of Kirk and Turning Point USA. He writes about them on his Medium site, as well as on Twitter, and I'll have links to both of those in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. I was excited to have this conversation because it's important that we pay attention to Charlie Kirk and his work, particularly as he's turned more towards Christian nationalism and faith advocacy. In fact, at our e-newsletter, A Public Witness, we wrote recently about Kirk and his new Saving America tour that might be coming to a church near you. You can find that report on the first two installments of the Saving America tour at publicwitness.wordandway.org. It's an essay on April 5th called Charlie's No Angel. So be sure to head over to publicwitness.wordandway.org and subscribe today so that you'll continue to find content like that. So we'll be talking about Charlie Kirk's career in general, but particularly focusing on what he's telling Christians today as he's trying to get them to become more partisan, not just in the voting booth, but in their pulpits and their pews. So here's my conversation with Matthew Bodie on Charlie Kirk. Matthew, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on to talk Charlie Kirk. Now, it might be fair to describe him as the most influential or one of the most influential political activists that most people haven't heard of.
Well, I don't know if most people haven't heard of him by now, but certainly he is influential. The opening to his radio show is Rush Limbaugh saying Charlie Kirk's running the White House. So that's a heavy endorsement. So if you don't know about him, you should at this point.
Well, for those who don't, why don't we give an introduction? Who is Charlie Kirk?
Charlie Kirk is the founder and president of Turning Point USA, which is a $45 million organization devoted to promoting free markets and capitalism, but it has switched very recently to promoting a form of Christian nationalism. There are two offshoots to that: Turning Point Action, which is the political action arm, and then he promotes candidates and endorsements. And the new one that's connected to the Christian nationalism is Turning Point Faith, which is underneath the umbrella of Turning Point USA, but it is Turning Point USA basically in churches. And he has, of that $45 million, he has money to burn. So he has set up high school and college chapters around the nation, started in 2012. So it's about 10 years old now. And it has skyrocketed to a very wide and deep influence in conservative evangelicals, conservative political organizations. And as I mentioned before, he is well known by people who were in the Trump administration.
Yeah, he ran the Students for Trump and had the...
Yes, that too. I'm sorry. Yeah, that became Turning Point Action. And he's written a couple of books about himself, about his business, but also about Trump's philosophy, if you will, if you want to call it that. And he has his own radio show now. He has a podcast. He does a million other things that he is well known for. He's not on Twitter anymore, but he had 1.7 million followers.
So, I mean, we'll get into a little bit of his work and what he's been saying and how you've been tracking that. But first, I wanted to kind of like go rewind the story. Why did you start paying attention?
You know, I've been asked that several times, and I think the answer I've come to is that Charlie Kirk and Turning Point paid attention to me first. I'm one of the original members of what they call the Professor Watch List. And that came out, I think, in the fall of 2016. And I got on it because in the spring of 2016, I wrote an op-ed for a local paper about a bill that became law about guns on campus. And I didn't think much of it. And then Campus Reform, the lesser known college watchdog website, you know, wrote something up about it. And then months later, Turning Point USA got together their list and they used a bunch of articles to that. And they put me on their list and targeted me, and I had not heard of them. So 4 years into Turning Point USA, this was really their one big first viral event. And, you know, everybody was kind of telling me at my school, oh, don't worry about it. Nobody knows who they are. And I'm like, have you read what they're doing? So I would say my answer to the question is they targeted me first. And really, I didn't get into writing about them until a year or two later. It was like, they keep getting bigger and keep doing things and people keep paying attention to them. So in 2018, I started a blog basically writing about Charlie Kirk and writing about what he says. And that has blossomed to other projects. But so it's been about 4 years that I've been writing about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, what the project had been primarily until more recently. We'll get to some of the turn towards Christian nationalism in a moment. But this targeting of professors, you and a number of others, and, you know, coming from someone who's a college dropout himself, it was an interesting move. And I think it says something ideologically that his initial focus as an organization was high school, college students and training them towards conservative values, essentially to spy on professors and report professors that are doing things, right?
Certainly. And they're not the first group to target college professors. I don't knock Charlie Kirk at all for not having a college degree. And he's a very smart person. He would have done well. That said, he picked a target, like I said, that has been targeted before, but they did it in a different and more profound, more social media way. His initial pitch to investors or to Republican GOP clubs, from 2012 to 2015 was him getting rejected by West Point for various reasons. No one knows for sure why he was rejected. West Point is very hard to get into. And, you know, he didn't have the grades, from what he could say. He said he had good grades. Well, I don't know his grades. But what I'm getting at is that was his initial story, was getting rejected from college when he wanted to go. And so I think that helped him see a way in. He actually said in an interview I was listening today, right, that when he got rejected from West Point, it was very negative and it was very difficult to understand why he did it. And he thought, I bet there are other people out there who are having the same experience I have of high school, because he talks about his initial way of getting known was a Breitbart article in 2012 about an advanced placement book that his friend had in his class. I don't think it was Charlie's class. And he wrote something about it negative and got on Breitbart and went on Fox News the same day. So from that moment, he has been anti-college, anti-higher education. There's a lot of remarks that he makes when he goes to campus. And then when he goes to churches, he tells the people at the church, I go to the college campus so you don't have to, which is just a remarkable, silly statement, but yet it gets lots of applause.
Yeah, and I do want to spend this moment to set the stage here. As you noted, you're a professor of rhetoric composition at the University of North Georgia. And so then what you have been doing now more recently is using your own training in rhetoric to pay attention to what Charlie Kirk is saying and what Turning Point USA is saying. So I wonder if you could talk us through some of the, I've got some specific questions we'll walk through in a moment, but I wonder, big picture, you know, what have you been noticing as someone who has probably paid more attention to what Charlie Kirk has been saying than just about anyone?
I think the fundamental thing I've noticed is the 180-degree turn not talking about religion, to it now being the focus of Charlie's life and therefore Turning Point USA's life. Turning Point USA was founded on getting rid of student debt, not forgiving it, but saying it's a scam. And free markets and capitalism and free speech and promoting people who, you know, have crazy views because of free speech. And those were the initial bread and butter issues of Turning Point USA. And as Charlie tells the story, during the pandemic, the churches were the only place open, even though that's not true. And he became interested in churches. The story he also tells is he ran into a pastor from California, a megachurch pastor from California in 2019-ish, and that pastor convinced him that was a lot to do with religion and politics that he should be talking about. So it's a 180-degree turn, because Charlie Kirk said, I'm not using my religion in politics, and now he is using it exactly the opposite way.
And I know that we can't, you know, peer into what he's thinking inside, but, you know, from the clues that he's given, I've heard him talk a couple of times about this shift, and you've probably heard him say it even more. Does it strike you as, you know, politically motivated? Does it strike you as some sort of, you know, conversion experience, if you will? Like, you know, how's the framing?
That's the question everybody asks. Does he believe these things now that he is saying? And it's difficult to know. I will say he has said all along that he has been a Christian. He was a member of James McDonald's megachurch in California, member or attender, whatever you want to call it, there in Chicago. And I think he was influenced by the sermons online that he heard and things like that. They put him out in front in a celebration of the church's anniversary. I think he has a Christianity. I don't doubt that. So why he decided to switch from talking about it more, or not just talking about it, but focusing on that, I really think that he saw a business opportunity. And he was convinced that he could find theological backing from this pastor disciple. So it is a combination of both. It's not one or the other. Turning Point USA, I think 2018, 2019 really started to think about itself as a growing organization that wasn't going to fail, that was going to continue on. So they, I think, struggled to figure out what did they want to do with, they actually called them the Turning Point alumni at some point. Like, what are they going to do with people who graduate from college? How do they reach those people? And where are those people at? Well, as Charlie discovered, they're in the churches. They may have gone to Turning Point USA Club, maybe an invested, but they're conservative politically and conservative religiously. And where are they at? Oh, they're in the churches. And that's where they went. And I think that it was an easy sell to donors to do that. So I think, again, it was a very personal thing for him, being discipled or being chained, but challenged, he called it, by Rob McCoy, the pastor in California. But I also think it made a lot of business sense as well.
And so, I mean, part of this project was his, it didn't last long, but his affiliation with Liberty University and, you know, the tenure.
Yeah, I think that was one of the opening ways to figure out how to meet where these alumni at. And it was a, they call it a think tank. It's a blog. He had a relationship with Jerry Falwell, you know, Jr., who obviously ran that school for a while. And it was a way to build both of their brands. Obviously, Liberty wanted to be, you know, the Harvard of the evangelical world, or be a big name. And it got to that, and they just combined themselves with another name. And Liberty University, after it fired Falwell, you know, treated Charlie very well. I mean, they declined to renew their contract, his contract with the, it was called the Falkirk Center. Now it's called the, you know, Standing for Freedom Center. And then they're still on good terms. And they gave him an honorary degree. So that was original kind of a link into it. But I think what Charlie learned from that, and again, I have never talked to him, so I don't know, but that he learned that education could be a way in or further way into to further Turning Point USA. And so right after that, they announced the Turning Point USA K-12 movement. You know, in Turning Point Faith right after that. So I think that he learned what could be done from that, how he could expand his own organization based upon what he learned for his short time at Liberty.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, fascinating moments that it's interesting to see him survive from that, with Jerry Falwell's Jr.'s, you know, collapse was so dramatic, and the Falkirk Center, as it was originally called, sharing the name of the two of them, you know, but when he left there, then that's when Turning Point starts this faith arm, essentially, to do what he was already kind of piloting in some ways with, right, with Falwell Jr. there at Liberty University. So I wonder if you can walk us into what are they doing at Turning Point Faith that you've been able to follow?
I mean, first, it was a big hiring spread. I think they hired maybe 50 people for just this arm of Turning Point. And what these people do, regional directors, people based in big cities, and they all around the United States, not just in the South, and not just in, you know, if you will, high conservative areas, from Seattle to York to Atlanta to Miami. And these people, as Charlie has described it, in many places, is to find churches and pastors, and that's really the key there, that agree with Turning Point, say, certainly in their principles, but are willing to talk about politics from the pulpit or convince them to do so. So it is really not setting up a Turning Point Club as a part of the church. It is really targeting the pastors, who then, of course, will convince their congregants to go along with that. So he has been touring churches over the last year, speaking on a Sunday evening or maybe during a midweek service. Not, I don't think he's done one or two Sunday mornings, but really it's about a Sunday evening kind of with the pastor on the stage and interviewing. Tell me your story. Tell me how you talk about it. And in so doing, right, he obviously sells the pastor to the church. Hey, he's doing a great job here. But also, what they want to talk about, of course, is how to motivate, engage, activate, I think the words he uses, is the congregants into politics. Get involved in your school board. Get involved in your local county races. Of course, get involved in the national races. And it is a really interesting thing to watch Charlie repeat this kind of mantra over and over again rhetorically, because it started out as he was going to do a confession. He was going to confess, and he called it a sin last week at one of these places, that he was not into religion and politics before, and he was convinced by Rob McCord to do it. It's like he confessed it to God and asked for forgiveness for not promoting this before. That is a heavy weight, if you will, but also evangelical talk, as we both know. So he is talking to these people in their language, giving them reasons to applaud, and trying to take turning points into the churches, but also motivating those churches and those congregants to do everything, vote, rally, anything you can think of.
Yeah, he started this Save America tour at churches. And I mean, he had some earlier events, but the new spring effort that he's doing right now is called the Save America
tour. Save America
tour. With a big cross in the logo.
Save part, yeah. I know, yeah. And of course, then he has a kind of a parallel thing when he goes to college campus during the week, Educate Not Mandate tour, which is about many things. But if you watch, and I've done this in the last week, is watch one video of and then the other. I mean, they're almost exactly the same in which the words he uses, except there's worship music and what, right? It's almost the same message.
Yeah, we wrote a bit about his Save America tour, particularly the event at St. Louis on a Sunday night at Grace Church at A Public Witness on April 5th. And so I'm excited to have this conversation to kind of follow up on some of that. You've given us a little bit of a hint, taking us into the service, but I want to spend a little bit more time as to, you know, what's his call to arm as he's talking to the congregation. You know, what is the purpose of these events that he's holding in churches?
It's part education, because I think he's assuming that the people in the congregants don't follow the news as much as he does. So he brings them into the inner circle of the news happenings and sort of the conservative polemics. I mean, he doesn't mention Fox News, but he talks about the stories that are on the TV. But also he does the thing where, he is the person bringing them both the good news and the bad news. The bad news is the churches are under attack and the churches are non-essential and they were forced to be closed by COVID policies. His good news is that churches are essential and they should fight back. And so he is giving the people in the audience, in the congregation, a way to think about what is happening outside the church, which is happening Monday through Saturday. As we all know, we've heard the line or the sad joke that people are being discipled by Fox News more than they're being discipled by their churches. So he is kind of combining that or making that into a positive course for him, right? And he tells biblical stories. He makes biblical references about really a lot of Old Testament references to match the kingdom of Israel to the church today. And I mean, one of the great lines he talks about is the ways in which the church is under attack, and that I think he said in one of them that soon they could be doing more prison ministries, not because they would go into prison to preach, but that they would be arrested, and that churches, pastors were being arrested in Canada right now. So he paints a dark, disturbing picture of what's happening for the people in the audience to be scared of, you know, what could happen in their church. And I think that's a powerful message, both from if the pastor repeats it. So there's a lot going on. It's about an hour and a half service, if you want to call it that. There's a Q&A, which always is good for Charlie Kirk. He's good with a lot of responding in that way. And of course, the pastor is there interviewing him and giving him, you know, softball questions, but also at the same time, repeating some of the mantras that he is saying. And it's just fascinating to hear what the pastors think of all these news articles and all the things, because they have to be on the same wavelength with Charlie, you know, to make this work. It's interesting. It's also very scary.
Yeah. And we can't downplay or underestimate the power of that pastoral blessing, right? So the congregation admires this, it's a man. I mean, in the churches that Charlie's going to be at, it's going to be a male pastor.
Right.
They show up Sunday after Sunday to listen to this person. They respect this man's advice on morality and, you know, and issues. And so when he then affirms what Charlie is saying, that's a significant affirmation for the theology and the politics that's going to come in that talk.
Certainly. And it brings Charlie Kirk not just as a political operative coming in to tell about politics, but he becomes a theological teacher. I mean, he, again, quotes scripture and references scripture and applies scripture in his comments. I mean, it's not a 45-minute sermon, but it is the same effect.
Yeah, and you highlighted this idea of Christian persecution, which is an interesting rhetoric. It's not unusual to him. It's something that we hear, you know, among those that espouse Christian nationalism regularly. But it's also fascinating from someone who is close to the most recent presidential administration. I mean, you know, who has been in the halls of power and yet is espousing this idea that, hey, we Christians, and I mean, these are predominantly, you know, white mega church settings, that, you know, we white Christian conservative Christians, we're the real victims in American society. We're the ones that are really being persecuted. That's an interesting argument.
And you know, I think he says directly, Charlie says directly, like, I don't recognize this America, as if a year ago it was 180 degree different. And even, of course, when Trump was in office, there was a persecution talk. But at the same time, now that they're not in power, it is even thrown on the table even more. And so it is mainly, I think, about COVID. And again, the churches that got shut down or were forced shut down, or again, as he judges the pastors who voluntarily didn't meet in person too. And that gives a great energy to people who in the church he's talking to, because they mainly, of course, did not stop meeting in person. And so that persecution is odd, as you make, because they've been meeting in person all the time. The church, their church wasn't shut down. So what actual persecution are they facing? Oh, it has to be the culture war. It has to be our values and our virtues and our reasoning are being attacked, and we're being called this and that. And so it is a great opportunity for him to expand Turning Point beyond college and high school, beyond issues that involve higher education, to anything they think of. And as you might imagine, they've been involved in the K-12 battles at school board. He's talked or showed up to speak to his local Arizona school board twice and given them the riot act. So he is really offering them a model of the congregants in any church, a model for how to do what he's asking them to do.
Yeah. And in, you know, these topics that we might otherwise think of, oh, well, this is what Charlie's doing in the political sphere, this is what he's doing that's, you know, quote, secular, whatever. I mean, he's also bringing them in with this religious, CRT, the anti-CRT messages are coming in at the church talks. I mean, the one in St. Louis, the church pastor was talking about school board elections as well. So, I mean, that was a really big push for that particular event. And so we get this religion, this baptizing of these hot button topics that we're hearing on Fox News or elsewhere, but now it's also being presented to the congregation as, this is one way you can live out your faith. Go to your school board, fight this, you know, CRT, fight the books that are in your school library and so forth. So there's really not a divide here between what he's doing in quote secular events and these religious events.
Not at all. And so, you know, when he offers that opportunity, he is bringing out scripture to do that. He talks about, counselors to the king, which is some verse that he quotes. I forget what it is, but he talks about Israel and the way that it went down and the way that it folded without, you know, people rising up. And talks about prophets. He talks about people who speak up. He talks about courage and faith and all the virtues we think of in terms of religious courage and faith, and he makes them standing up for political topics. It is a wedding of it that we've seen before, of course, with more majority and all the groups after that. But because he's 26, 27, you know, just married, fresh face, and saying it in a way that I think it is more direct. And I mean, you could call it shallow, but at the same time, it works. He understands how to speak in their language, understands how to say the things that need to be said. And I think what he does is that there's a cliche, always be on offense. So he takes whatever happens, whether it is on the news or whether it is religion, and makes it a positive for his, theology. So anything that happens, it is either persecution, which is, a rallying cry, or it is a a negative for the country, right? If we go in this direction, if we go in this left direction, it would be bad for not just the church, but for America. And it is that combination. The church is America. America is the church. That is quite dangerous. I just wrote about his use of the phrase consent of the governed, which happens in the Declaration of Independence. And his definition or his application of that is if he personally and all the people in that church did not consent to any one particular government policy or law, that they can rebel against it, that we didn't give consent, therefore we can rebel. I that's dangerous, but also the time it's giving them activation. Go to your school board and say, I didn't consent to this book in the library. Yeah, that's one thing. But at the same time, he's promoting this vague sense of rebellion to the government, which plays well in churches that he's going to. But at the same time, he keeps it vague enough so it isn't a call to physical action.
Yeah, and I also wanted to talk about this aspect of Christian nationalism. And you just made a comment about the kind of America as Christian and Christian, you know, as American. And obviously, as the way he tells the story of America's founding, he's very explicit in telling this myth of the founding of a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, then is foundational then for application for everything that's supposed to be happening today. Because if we were supposed to founded as a Christian nation, then that brings some logical implications to Christians running things today.
Certainly. I mean, there's plenty of myths. He talks about, I think, 53 or the 54 signers of the Declaration of Independence were all Bible-believing Christian intent. It's not true. He talks about the pastors. Some of them were pastors in this Black Robe Regiment, which is a myth. But these are facts that he seems to lay out in front of them. And so it is a way, obviously, to give a history lesson, but also a way to say that this pastor next to me is one of those, you know, in that camp, and you should listen to him. And then also with this regular citizens rising up against their government, and their government who is not leading in the way that it should be led. It is the phrase is Christian nationalism. It's connected to the old label of Christian Reconstructionism, which is, you know, a theological term, if you will. But at the same time, it is a way in which to activate the Christians in the seats to do something, Monday through Saturday. And I think Charlie Kirk's version of Christian nationalism is similar to what we've heard before, but at the same time, it is different because he is making not just the explicit connection between religion and politics that we see, but he is making explicit connections and raising the stakes on each individual government decision. It is that we just confirmed a Supreme Court justice or that this thing over here, and each particular thing is possibly the end of Christian America or possibly the end of the United States or tyranny or the Biden regime. You know, anything he raises the stakes to, he's able to do that, as you pointed out, because he's already raised the stakes of America as a Christian nation. There's no coming down from that. There's no changing that. If that is the truth, then we have to apply it. And that is pretty simple Bible teaching. This is what the Bible says. Therefore, we have to do this. We're a Christian nation. Therefore, we have to do this. It's pretty easy logic to follow.
Yeah. And I know for some, this might sound, crazy. Or it's like, well, why would anybody listen to him if he has all these myths and his facts are inaccurate? But I mean, he's compelling. He's charismatic. Yeah. He's convincing. And
he's very good at what he does. Yeah.
A lot of facts, a lot of quotes. He'll, when he's talking about the Bible, he'll reference, in the Hebrew, it really means this. I mean, yeah. He can lay out a case that sounds really good.
Yes, he's very good on stage, in any stage. He's very good responding to people in Q&A. He's very good at making people or saying things in chunks so people can understand and following them. I mean, the Q&A he does with the pastor is very easy because he can speak for 3 or 4 minutes and just go on. And then they applaud at the end, like, wow, I never heard this before in this great way. I think what makes him good is, the quick reference of things, but also he, as I said before, kind of speaks their language. He talks about his own confession, his own turning and his own, repentance, if you will. But at the same time, he recognizes that the people in the audience, he frames it this way, is like, how many people in America want to be free? And he points out that basically it's only the Christians who are free, religiously, of course. But then he very go quickly into politically. So what he's pointing out is the people in the congregation, the people who are already here, you already have it in you to be like me, right? It is a fascinating kind of relationship he has with the audience, and he does it really well because he speaks so, not so fast, but he speaks in such easy digestible ways.
Yeah. And that, well, you're just giving an example of, he gives this sense of, you all are special. You know something that other people don't, and that you value things. I mean, because he actually, on the freedom part, even talks about how most people don't want to be free. Right. So you all are the special ones. Mm-hmm. And that's a satisfying message to be told.
Certainly. I think that this insider language, he comes as the political insider, but then turns it around so that they are the people on the inside. They are the people that could change things. I really think is a great political speech, right? But also works in religious rhetoric well. It speaks in the language that they know. It speaks in ways that they recognize what a sermon is, right? We're going to have a teaching. We're going to have the scripture reading. We're going to have interpretation. And then we're going to have a call to action, or a call to the front, if you want, altar call, if you will. So he recognizes the order in which people in the congregation want to hear things. And he recognizes that they want personal stories, which is fascinating to them. And they also want, kind of a blessing on it. Once we come to this conclusion, can we have the blessing on what we're about to do from the pastor? And they do that pretty easily.
We'll be right back with the rest of our conversation. But first, I want to let you know about more of what Word and Way has to offer besides just this podcast. If you are looking for thoughtful Christian analysis of current events to help you make sense of our crazy world of faith, culture, and politics, then you need to subscribe to A Public Witness, an email newsletter from Word and Way. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And now, back to this conversation. Yo. This podcast will be coming out in a couple of weeks, but at the time that we're talking, just last night, I heard Antia Butler, author of White Evangelical Racism, was talking about the danger of Christian nationalism, particularly what it's doing to our democracy. And her closing example is Charlie Kirk. She's had the shared company with you on the professor watch list. And so he's been on her radar for a while. But I wonder if we can talk about that aspect of what's happening here. What does this ultimate message that he's providing, you know, what are the dangers, if you see any, as to what this presents to our democracy, our, you know, small d democratic system?
One, I mean, it is the sense that because, and I don't know what number, this is, we'll say, the fifth version of Christian nationalism we've had since the 80s. You have to raise the stakes each time. And at right now, the stakes are, we're steps away from a revolution. There was a famous clip of somebody at a Charlie Kirk event some months ago asking, you know, when do we get to use the guns? Now, he pushed back against that and saying, you know, that's a bad idea. That's exactly what they want. But he keeps repeating the rhetoric that leads up to that. There's a reason he got that question, right? So he is constantly raising the stakes of normal routine government actions, public health reactions. I mean, he isn't the only one doing it, but he is doing it. So he's constantly raising the stakes. And two, because his own version of Christian nationalism is so succinct and so based in rather shallow biblical, you know, references, I won't say teachings, it's easily spread. It's easily digestible. He can do it in a tweet if he were on Twitter now. He could do it in a 4-minute answer to a question, and people can repeat it over and over again. I mean, it's people, I heard Charlie Kirk say this, or he does it on his radio show. So it doesn't take a lot of thought to follow what he is saying. Of course, you know, in that regard, people write books and mantras over Christian Reconstructionism. He does it in a 3-minute reply. So you raise the stakes, you make it easy to follow. And then, of course, the most dangerous part is the disinformation, misinformation part. And that's what motivated me last semester to focus an entire class on disinformation and misinformation through the 2016 election to now. Charlie is a big lie supporter. That Trump won the 2020 election. And there are other lies that he goes along with that. So with bad information, misinformation, just changing the way we think, with the stakes so high and also easily things to keep in your mind are either bumper sticker mottos. It is a mix that is strikingly impactful, important, impactful, dangerous because it's so easily impactful. But at the same time, we're at a moment where each, not just each election cycle, every 2 years, every 4 years, but at almost each day is just more and more raising of the stakes and raising of the energy. And at some point that is going to have to burst. We cannot sustain this type of, I'm going to call it partisanship. I mean, whatever you want to call it, we cannot sustain this very long.
Yeah, and you mentioned the issue of guns and some of the rhetoric on that. I mean, you have a chapter coming out in a book that's just out this month, Rhetoric and Guns, and your chapter is called Guns and Freedom, the Second Amendment Rhetoric of Turning Point USA. And so you've spent some time paying attention to what Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA are saying about the Second Amendment and about guns. So I wonder if you can get us a little taste of what your research has shown in on that topic.
I looked at a bunch of internet postings, memes, kind of things from Turning Point USA that's specifically about guns. You know, Charlie spoke a lot about guns. He's a Second Amendment supporter. One of his first books was about the Second Amendment. So he's always been that way. But in promoting the Second Amendment through Turning Point USA, they often use, of course, the millennial go-to, which is the memes. And they're easy to understand, they're digestible, and they make a central point. One of them is that you know, it's a shape of a gun, and it spells out the Second Amendment. And Charlie's go-to model is the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments, which isn't true. At the same time, he also says that God gives us our rights, but yet we have to have guns to protect those rights. But what I'm getting at in terms of religion is in the chapter, I notice how they use women, females in their memes and guns. And there's a female, a young girl with a pink rifle. There's other females with, you know, small handguns on their ankles or on their side or in their purses. And it used to be mainly about self-protection, you know, dangerous places they have to go, things like that. But it's become more in the religious sense, especially of trying to make guns more female oriented, not so much for protection, not so much for the absence of a man for protection, but to use it in their own regard, which is why we have this pink rifle thing. And so I tie it to the debate between complementarianism and egalitarianism in the church. I would suggest that Turning Point USA, if it had to choose, would be complementarianism. Charlie Kirk is all that as well. He talks about leadership of men. He talks about pastor's leadership. So in the chapter, I try to analyze these memes and talk about how they promote complementarianism implicitly and promote female gun ownership, but also do it through a bevy of misinformation and disinformation on gun rhetoric, which, you know, you can find pretty easily. So it is not a big issue for them anymore. It used to be, I think. It comes and goes, but there's certainly a lot out there about Turning Point USA and its gun rhetoric.
So, you know, as we're heading into this midterm election year, and then, you know, immediately after that, we'll be into the next presidential election. Obviously, Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA and Turning Point Faith are they're already engaged in these topics. You know, from what you have studied of them, what would you expect to see coming forward in these next, you know, really critical election cycles?
Well, one, there's Turning Point Action, which is the 504, which can endorse candidates. So Charlie will walk neighborhoods. He will endorse candidates he's already had. He will do that. He will go to props to raise money for them. So that certainly will help them. Then in terms of Turning Point Faith, what he's doing now, of course, is planting the seeds, if you want to use a biblical reference, and making it so that people will show up in November. And he is giving them ideas to think about and trying to connect it to the daily news cycles, right? There's a school board thing that's been going on for months. And of course, the spring legislative sessions has brought all these anti-CRT bills, book ban bills, parents bill of rights. And I'm just talking about Georgia for the moment. So all
it's
that
funny.
He is
you
tying...
say you're talking about Georgia, sound like Missouri where I'm at. So I mean, right, it's right, the same story.
Yeah. No. So he is tying his parents at churches to these events and saying these things will continue, right? So he is planting the seeds. He is building coalitions. He is activating people in congregations. But specifically, of course, he is trying to get pastors to be more politically open, if you will, or directive to their congregates during sermons. I wrote a study of sermons given after the 2016 election. I called it the Sunday after the Tuesday, and tried to, you know, say which one endorsed, which one didn't. I looked at ones before as well. And I could find very few, actually, of all the ones I looked at. And I looked at many of them, probably about 100, that could directly endorsed, but also specifically mention values or issues that are going on with the election. I think that will be different this time around, and not just for this coming primary or election season, but in 2024. He is trying to make that happen. And I think that he is having success because he's getting invited to all these churches, but also that we see just, as we mentioned, this persecution. It isn't just about getting out to vote. It is about showing up as poll watchers. It is about showing up to things that can undo elections. And so we will see, again, Christian conservatives in that category doing everything and vote. I mean, they have millions of dollars to spend, so they will find ways to spend it. So endorsing candidates, Charlie Kirk will do that. Turning Point USA will have these events at churches. He's had several once a month at Dream City in Phoenix. But he's obviously doing this tour in the spring. He'll probably have another one in the fall. He usually has every semester a college tour to go along with that. But I can think, of course, that he is promoting all this same message. And this is really the efficiency, if you will, of Turning Point USA. His radio show, his events, his memes, everything is on brand. And so people watching this will get the message. It is a media empire now, not just a college group anymore. And so he has many ways to get out his message.
So if people are wanting to learn more and keep up to date, I mean, the best way they could do would be to follow you and your Medium site. Can you let people know where you're writing and what it is that you're trying to accomplish there?
So I'm on Medium. You can search for my name, Matthew Bode. You know, every article is titled Debunking Charlie Kirk on Something. I think I have 100 now. I mean, honestly, it's a side gig.
That's a lot of bunk.
Yes. Yeah, you debunk. What is the bunk? Yeah. So it's a different topic. And honestly, it's a side gig for me. So, I get out once every couple of weeks, but I do a lot of Twitter threads and they're cataloged there as well. I'm on Twitter at Matthew Bode. You can go there as well. I write every now and then for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution education blog. It's called Get Schooled. I've had several things there. Most recently, I did a long article for Political Research Associates called The 10 Years of Turning Point USA. So I'm at those different places. Like I said, I had the chapter come out in Guns and Rhetoric. It's published by the University of Colorado Press. So I'm doing those things. And I've done 5 or 6 podcasts now. I'm sure you could find me on the internet if you search my name. So I'm out there, you know, spending my side gigs on this, right? So I do teach at the university on a daily basis. But those are the places you can find me.
Do you ever have that point where you're like, why am I subjecting myself to yet another Charlie Kirk speech?
I think I drew a line at the radio show. I don't listen to the radio show. I've been to 2 of his events in person. He came to the University of Georgia twice during 2 different tours. So I've heard him speak in person. And you get the same sense that the watchwords or the keywords may change, but it's the same atmosphere. The radio show, it's 3 hours a day. I couldn't. There are people's job who is to listen to him and see what he says. But I try to catch, you know, these small videos that he does on YouTube, check his YouTube page out every now and then. But yeah, there's a reason why I don't write every day about him. It would be a difficult beat to write if I had to cover him every day, because it's really the same thing every day. It's just like, what can you say next that's outrageous and, of course, gets his listeners. So he blocked me on Twitter. All the Turning Point USA accounts blocked me on Twitter. So now that he's off Twitter, it's kind of hard to find what he's writing about because he's not on Twitter a lot. So doing that is difficult. But like I said, he's on multiple places, and you can find, if you want to listen to him, he's on YouTube many a place.
Well, very good. Well, we'll put links to your Medium site and Twitter in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And Matthew, I appreciate the fact that you have been helping to you know, shine the light of truth here. You know, this, there's a lot that's happening that really is, it's threatening to our democracy. It's threatening to the Christian faith. And if it goes unchallenged, then those, you know, devastating results will continue. The consequences will continue to build and to grow. So I appreciate the fact that you have been helping to, you know, fight back a little bit against all of these lies and these, this dangerous rhetoric. And thanks for joining us here on the show to talk more about it.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to listening to it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.